Welcome to Brain is the New Ass. I'm your host, Katie Brigham, and here we just have girl talk. Serious, but like funny girl talk. Common themes are health, relationships, and personal stories. Thank you for being here. Hi, Dr. Asia.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm excited to chat with you today.
I am so excited that you're on the show. I have followed you for a really long time. And I remember when, this is like so nerdy, but, and I wanted to tell you this beforehand, but I was like, I'm just going to save it for the show to tell her. So I was like writing down my dream guest for the podcast and you were on it, but aww. I was like, it would be a cold reach out. And then one day you followed me back. And I was like, do you remember me making a big deal out of it on story? I was like, okay, really big deal here, guys. And aww. Especially because you don't follow that many people. And I was like, I was so excited. And then I was like, okay, this is a sign from God. I can reach out to her. After a little bit, I'm not going to be desperate. But after a little bit, I'm going to reach out to her and see if she'll come on the podcast.
Yeah, I'm totally down like for podcasts and just talking about gut health all the time. And yeah, I don't follow a lot of folks on IG, and that's largely because like I have ED, and so it's just too much going on Instagram already. And to get on there and see all this content, like it just does a number on my brain. But I like your content, and there was something you posted in your story one day that I just bust out laughing. I can't remember what it was, but I just remember thinking this is hilarious. Health or something you were talking about.
I'm unhinged on stories. I really am. I just share whatever the hell comes to my mind. And I'm just like, I just put it out there. Like,
I love whatever.
You know, it keeps it fun for sure. That's so funny. But yeah, I love your stuff. Everyone loves your stuff. Whenever I post about you, I know I was telling you this earlier, but I have so many people in my inbox being like, she is so amazing. And your posts really are very different, I'd say, from a lot of people in the health and wellness world, because I can tell you're not like just about likes, views, like all that, because you're really like classy in your delivery. Because sometimes I feel like, do you ever notice how sometimes people can be very like shock value?
Yeah, there's a lot of that on social media now. And there's a lot of just, I think that this has been like this resurgence, or maybe not a resurgence, of just like using the worst possible language you can use on social media to get likes and views. And it's just so uncouth to me. And I don't really understand what that whole movement is about. Funny here and there, but it just seems like everybody's into just saying the most vulgar things to get, like you said, shock value.
Yes. It's like, you can tell that you are really in it for the right reasons. And some people, I feel like maybe they started it for the right reasons, but now it's almost like they're just trying to be a celebrity.
Yep. You see a lot of that.
Yeah. I like just even today, I was like, I love too that you said that you're ADD. I am as well.
Yeah.
Diagnosed. And it was so funny because I was like thinking, going through my feed, because it is so distracting and a lot. And sometimes it's just stimulation overload. Just going through and defollowing a lot of people in the health and wellness world that I was just like, I just feel like it almost like sometimes it gives me the same feeling as like when a celebrity runs to be a politician.
Yeah, exactly.
Kind of thing. Yeah. But
no, I agree.
But I can tell that you really are just in it for the right reason. Your stuff is so detailed. Sources, anyone, like, I just hope that when they see that post that it's like, this was not created in 5 minutes. I feel like your posts take probably hours.
They do take hours. Like the plastic post that I put together, which is a recent one on my page, it took me like 5 hours to do that one. And I was actually on vacation with my family and I took my little iPad that I use to read through studies. And then I have my computer with me so I can just type into my slides, but it takes me so long. And that's because I really do read the studies that I cite and I try to make sure I'm extrapolating the information properly. And then also making sure it's translated in a easy manner for like the lay person to read it and not feel like, oh my gosh, she's just trying to make herself seem intelligent and talk above me. I want people to really get the information because honestly, there's so much happening in the world environmentally, and there's so many little things we can do every day that add up in the end. So that's ultimately the goal. It's like, if I didn't have a clue, if I was just, I used to work at Starbucks, but if I was like a Starbucks self back in college, would I be able to read this and actually get something from it? Or would I just be like, what is she saying?
Yes. That's so important. And by the way, I was a barista too. Not at Starbucks. Uh-oh.
Where were you a barista?
It was called Bella Brew. It's in my small hometown. I'm so thankful for those days. Mm-hmm. That was so fun. Are you still a coffee drinker?
I love coffee and I'm trying to do like a short trial of like elimination, but I just honestly can't because there are more studies supporting the benefit of coffee than there are studies for fish oil and all these other supplements. So it's, I don't know. Will I ever give it up? Probably not, but maybe I'll do a short trial period. But I used to be so addicted to coffee in college. I would do coffee and I would do Red Bull just to, I was addicted to caffeine and I literally got a fibrocystic breast tumor because of so much caffeine, which, and I had to have a mammogram at like 19 years old and a breast. Yeah, because I didn't know what was going on. I just felt this hard lump in my breast. And I went to the doctor and I'm thinking like, you just catastrophize everything. I'm like, oh my gosh, I must have breast cancer. And it doesn't even run in my family. But I went to the doctor and they're like, we'll do an ultrasound. And I'm like, okay, the ultrasound, we're not sure what the ultrasound results show. So let's do a mammogram. I'm like, oh my gosh, I definitely have it. It wasn't that, it was just coffee. But that's how bad I used to consume, how often I consumed coffee in my teenage years.
Wow.
So anyways, yes, I love coffee.
Dr. Asia, she's just like us. She's also been through some stuff.
That's right.
Oh my gosh. Wow. That is so nuts.
It is.
Yeah. Caffeine addiction is a very real thing. I used to be addicted to caffeine as well. I'm definitely not anymore, but I, like you, I will not give it up. It's so funny because I just see so many people demonizing coffee. I'm like, do you not see how many studies show like how great coffee can be? And also, it's just so deeply cultural as well.
Yeah.
And I just think like it can be so great for the brain as well. And like, what's your favorite benefit with coffee? I'm so interested to know.
I read a lot of literature around like liver health and cardiovascular related issues. And I say cardiovascular because that's why I got into naturopathic medicine, is a lot of people in my family were just dying of heart-related issues when they were young and they were taking medication. So I just started down the more medical interest in coffee relative to cardiovascular disease. And then there's also some interesting literature around coffee and liver disease. So I think it's a very useful tool. I think that obviously with anything, you want to make sure you're putting the best quality in your body and sourcing really good beans and whatnot. But I don't have an issue with people drinking coffee. And in some studies, you find people drinking 3 or 4 cups of coffee have the cardiovascular risk reductions compared to those who are not drinking coffee. I don't know. I don't think I'll ever give it up. Maybe I'll do some periods of elimination to see how my body feels. But I love coffee. Like, I make my own coffee at home. Sometimes I'll go out and have a cup of coffee. The only thing is with having coffee outside of the home is you can't really control the beans or if they're clean or not, if they're being sprayed.
The water just the tap water? Yep. That's what I always think about. I know this is so extra, but I would love for there to be like a map of the coffee shops that use filtered water.
That'd be nice. That'd be a really good app to create. There'd probably be only a few users, but because I feel like most people don't care. Like most of the Starbucks drinkers, they don't care about the water, about the beans, but that'd be a great app.
I know. It would be, but the people who care, like they would be regulars for sure.
I would definitely be a regular.
So one thing I want to talk to you about, and honestly, I don't think I've ever been so excited to talk about something really before is, so there's a lot of people who cannot afford to see a functional medicine doctor. And I will preface it with this. If people can afford it, do it. It's so worth it. Like I'll tell my girlfriends all the time, I'm like, instead of buying that pair of shoes or buying that handbag, like you complain about your constipation, your bloating or whatever a lot, like you should maybe invest that money in like a stool test or seeing a functional medicine doctor, getting some data. And when they do, obviously, like, lives change when you start working on gut health. And so I do think for people, save up for it to see a functional medicine doctor or get data. If you have a birthday or Christmas, like, coming up and someone's going to get you a big Christmas present, ask for that. I think that's, like, number one. But there's still a subset of people that, like, they want so badly to do these stool tests, go to functional medicine doctors, but they cannot afford it. So I would love to talk about, where can these people start?
Yeah, I find the same thing. And it's interesting because I have folks on both sides. They're like, no, I want to improve my health, but I don't want to pay for these tests. Or I have folks that are like, I need all the tests. But when it comes to basics, like I always start with kind of just how the body operates on its own, right? So we know that you need a certain amount of macro and micronutrients. You need good proteins, fats, good quality carbohydrates, just the micronutrients, minerals, vitamins, and all that jazz. So that all comes from just a good diet, right? So I won't even say clean diet, because I honestly don't really work clean when referencing like diet and like detox, and it infers that if something is not one way, it must be dirty or bad. Totally. But that's a matter of semantics. That's not really anything I guess to argue about. But I think that a healthy or a good diet is the best place to start. And that's just kind of like making sure you're not eating a ton of processed foods and just like highly sugarized foods, and making sure you're staying away from certain foods that are high in like certain chemicals, environmental agents. So that's a basic place to start before adding any supplement in or adding in any test.
I want to tell you about my favorite product from MSW Nutrition. This is something that I used for a really long time. It's called Bliss. It's basically a serotonin and dopamine booster. It's sublingual. It's like this little powder. You put it under your tongue. It is so good for mood support. It's also great for the joints. It's also great for the liver. If you have an MTHFR gene mutation, it can be wonderful for that. I take this in times when I just have a little slump socially. I'll take it then. I'll take it if I have a cocktail. That's rare. But if I do, I'll take it then. It's wonderful. Try it out. My code is VioletFog. So to make sure... that you have a diet that you're covering the bases, like you said, protein, fat, carb, minerals, vitamin, or. And then, so let's talk about some advice that they're getting if you think that they should take this or not. Like, for one, and I know we were talking about this earlier, but the predatory nature of some influencers who are creating these gut health reset programs, they're not accredited. Yeah. They have no data on these people's gut health. Right. They're treating it like a one size fits all. They're thinking that because maybe they did some amazing things for their own gut, that it is going to translate to the next person.
Right.
So they write up this thing. They sell it. They just have these grandiose promises. Just, it's pretty dangerous.
Yeah, I've seen them. They exist in most in integrative medicine spectrum. So you see them for gut, you see them for reproductive, you see them all over the place. And you're right. You're like, what is this information that has been being given out? And is it actually applicable to the person who is paying for the course? So I do think that baseline is important. And anybody that I see, I'm like, these are the labs that I like to see within this certain time frame, because the body always changes, different stressors, environments, foods, whatnot. I think it's good to have blood work that's up to date, but I think the best place to start, any good doctor or clinician knows that a history is of utmost significance when it comes to understanding somebody's complete medical history. You can glean so much from just taking a good initial intake history. And my intake, it's a questionnaire, which I sometimes will give out, sometimes I don't because it's so long, but I ask super nitty-gritty questions. I ask people where they grew up, I ask them what type of house they lived in, I ask them if they grew up near a freeway, if they grew up on a farm, like, and so forth. And so I ask,
they have mold in the house.
Exactly. And a lot of people don't know because we aren't really wired to pay attention to these things growing up. You smell things or things smell odd, and I guess if you smell it enough, you're like, oh yeah, I did live in a house that had this. But I know folks who had whose bedrooms are in the basement, and they're just like, oh, it just smells like the basement. And I'm like, well, what is that? Is that like the basement mold smell, or is it just something like some other smell? But usually basement smell means mold, but people, that it's normalized. And
that's
obviously
so true. Oh my gosh, I honestly did not even think of that. The basement smell, how that usually is mold.
It's usually the mold.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, so people say that. I had one guy who grew up in a very moldy house, and he knew it was moldy, and he ended up having all these weird autoimmune issues later on. And I say weird because there was not any real solid like consensus on what his diagnosis was with his rheumatologist and with other doctors. We just knew there was some autoimmune picture happening because certain like lab markers were elevated, and who knows if that was the mold or something else. But I think that we are of nature. And so we're not just these kind of like steel armored humans. Like, we interact with nature as much as nature interacts with or has to deal with all of our crap. It just is dependent on how much one body can tolerate.
Mm-hmm. Totally. I love that you say that. And it's funny because I had just talked to another naturopathic doctor, And she was like, and my question to her, I was like, where would you start with data? If you could only do just at random, I picked three tests. I'm like, a blood workup, the Dutch test, or a comprehensive stool test. And I was like, if you had to pick one, she's honestly, I don't think I would start with either. I would just start with the most like intensive intake, like form you've ever seen. Mm-hmm, just getting the history is truly
It really is crucial. You just have to know what to ask in what depth to ask certain questions, because I mean, you can start off on the gut and go so many ways with asking about gut related questions. So when I ask folks about their gut, what I'll typically ask them is, you know, the basics. What's your bowel frequency like? Are you going to the bathroom every day, or are you going once a week? So when I say frequency, a lot of people say, oh, I go every day. Then I say, okay, so when you do go, what does it look like? Is it small volume stools? Is it normal shape? Are you straining? And they're like, oh, I just have a few small volume stools. And I'm like, you can still have a lot of stool in you even if you go every day. And then I'll ask about bloating. I'll ask about their history of antibiotic use. Not necessarily when is the last time they've used antibiotics, but I'll say, what's your antibiotic history? Are you somebody that, you know, grew up having antibiotics often as a kid? Are you somebody that's often in college and so forth? I go really in depth with all their bowel questions. I ask them about their history of medications related to the bowel. So I ask about steroid use. I ask about NSAIDs, ibuprofen, Aleve, those types of drugs. Use of those. I'll ask them about as soon as they wake up in the morning, how does their belly feel? And it's kind of a weird question to ask folks, but I'll just say that a lot of people that I see have GI issues just because that's my training. So I attract the GI crowd. But one thing I'll ask is people notice their gut issues often throughout the day, maybe sparingly here and there. But some folks will say, when I wake up, I don't have anything. Like, my gut is fine. And then I drink water and I'm all of a sudden bloated. Or I do X, Y, and Z and I start noticing abdominal pain and so forth. So I literally will start from the time somebody wakes up and what's your first meal? What did you eat? And what did you experience after you ate? What did you poop? What happened? Like, I really want to know kind of what their gut is doing. So I will ask a whole visit just about gut related questions. And then I'll go back up the gut and ask about upper GI symptoms, like their esophagus and their stomach, or maybe like small intestine. There's a lot you can get by just taking a good history. So if somebody told me that, if somebody's seeing me because they're bloated and they're gassy bloated, and I go through their case and take a history, and they say, yeah, as soon as I eat, I don't know, like certain fruits, I will notice that I'm significantly more bloated. I look like I'm 9 months pregnant. And I ask them, when you go to the bathroom and have a bowel movement, does that go away or does the bloating stay? Some people will say, yeah, it definitely goes away. And some folks will say, no, it does not affect it at all. So when somebody tells me that having a bowel movement does not improve their gas bloating, then I think maybe it's not necessarily a constipation issue, because the main cause in GI world of gas bloating is constipation, right? So you have all that bacteria in your colon that just eats on your stool if it's hanging out there, and they just produce gas. So if they will say, yeah, when I go to the bathroom, everything goes away, then I'm like, you probably just have a ton of stool in there. Let's try some things to move your bowels and then reevaluate the bloating.
Yeah.
After a while, you do it so much, it just becomes like second nature. But there are certain questions you can ask to help you guide what's going on in somebody's gut.
If they, let's say they do need to get more stool moving, what do you think of coffee enemas and colonics? Because I'm sure a lot of people, like, their mind goes there.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with coffee enemas or colonics. I actually just had a colonic this morning.
I had my first one this year.
Really?
Yes. Yes.
How was it?
You know what? I was so nervous, and it was like the sweetest old woman who had been doing it for 45 years. And I'm like, if anyone is going to shove a tube up my ass, like, this is who I want it to be. I want it to be her. I don't want it to be like, I don't know, some like hot young person or something. And there were definitely times when it felt a little bit uncomfortable. But afterwards, I felt a brightness, a lightness. Like, it was just amazing. And the reason why I had done it is because I had gone to Costa Rica for 2 weeks for my honeymoon, and I was constipated like the entire time, and I'm never constipated. And I was just like, I can almost guarantee there's stuff stuck to my walls after 2 weeks in Costa Rica. Yeah. So I like the colonic. I don't think it's going to be something that I do all the time. Like, I think it's something I'm going to use like situationally, but did you like it?
I am doing it. One of my teachers in school, when I was in like medical school, is, he was, he actually passed, but he was a leading mind in environmental medicine. And he's really big on colonics to reduce somebody's like toxic burden. So I didn't really do it for like gut issues per se, but I did 3 in 1 week and I had 2 the next week. So he recommends having them back to back. This is just his protocol. Yeah. So I've been just kind of experimenting.
I had 3 as well.
Nice.
Yeah, I did all 3. Yeah.
Nice. And so the purpose of that is to help flush out more bile, which is where the toxins are conjugated and released through urine or through bile, or they can be actually released through our sweat. He recommends like having initially like to jumpstart 3 colonics 1 week, 2 the next week, or just 5 within a 2 week period, however you decide to do it. But
yeah,
and then 1 every week after, or however as you need it. I don't think I'll do every week, but I liked it. I did have some cramping when I do colonics, and I think that's just the nature of the musculature there. But
yeah, like how could you not? Is what I want to know.
Exactly. So I enjoyed it. It was fine. I will say that the first time I did it, I noticed like just a more sanity and like a clearer mind. If that is weird to describe, yes. But I do remember feeling like the lights were turned on a little bit or the blinds were opened a little bit more.
Yes, I do know, because that's exactly what I felt too. I truly felt brighter. And just, mm-hmm. It was like some, like a little, I wasn't brain foggy, but I did have a little bit lift. Like a little, if there was any fog there, it was lifted. Yeah, that's okay. So that's something that someone could do if they're gassy, bloated, and they need to get bowels moving. Would you say that, or would you not?
Yeah, I think that colonics are a great tool. I don't necessarily think that should be the first step, because stool is supposed to go down, and our bodies are not necessarily engineered to just keep continuously flush water up for to produce stool. The colon is designed to exit towards the ground gravity, so things should be going down. Yeah. So yeah, I'm a fan of colonics, and I'd prefer that. Oh, if somebody is really constipated, I'd rather you get it out than keep it in. I prefer it over use of like chronic medications for constipation. But the other side of that is a matter of frequency. So you shouldn't necessarily need colonics every week to go to the bathroom. That's not a good sign. But if you have them every now and then, I don't think it's a problem. But for people.
What would you say to people who they're just starting on their gut health journey? And I'm saying this because there are probiotics is what I want to ask you about. You think that because there's some probiotic companies, they are so good at marketing that they make it seem like it is really good for, their brand is good for everyone. And of course, they won't single out who it's not good for. Do you think there's like, that everyone should be on probiotics? Do you think that people need to be on specific probiotics? Do you believe in no probiotics?
I don't really know if everybody should be on them. I'm always taking things because I'm just always experimenting on myself. So that's one thing, but I don't necessarily know if everybody should be on them. And you look at populations that, you know, have long, healthy lifespans, the blue zones and whatnot, they're not taking probiotics. I don't think it's just observational. Yeah, they eat a lot of fruits and vegetables though, which are prebiotic. So in some ways they're feeding their microbiome, but they're not directly taking a probiotic. I don't think there's anything wrong with taking a probiotic. When you look at the literature, there's like a few reports of somebody with severe like immune disorder or immunodeficiency disease taking probiotics and having some weird reaction to it. But that's literally like a handful of cases, like less than 5 people that I've found in the literature. But I don't think there's an issue with taking them. I think that there's a lot of science coming out showing how certain bacteria can modulate not only our gut, but our entire system. So I like using probiotics to induce anti-inflammatory responses because I want to live to be like 150.
Yes, me too.
And I want to get to that age gracefully. I think that just for gut health, they are really beneficial in certain populations. I don't think that people with SIBO necessarily benefit from the general probiotics, and you may need more specific recommendations. But I mean, I have a problem with probiotics.
Let's say someone has taken a ton of antibiotics in their life, and full transparency, I have taken, I'm not kidding you, probably close to 500 to 1,000 rounds of antibiotics.
Are you serious?
I'm dead serious, because I was born with a bladder defect. And I started my life on a ton of antibiotics, and I would take an antibiotic every single day from when I was 6 months old until I think I was 6 years old. And then they told me I would always get bladder infections until it was so weird. They said I would get them until I got my period, and then it would stop. And then and then I wouldn't get them again until I became sexually active. That's what they told me. That's what they predicted, the urologist. And that's exactly what happened. It was so – I got a ton of bladder infections as a kid. And if I got more, they'd throw even more antibiotics at it. And my parents, they did the best they could. I love them. They're such amazing people. But they just didn't know. They're like the type that kind of a – not – I don't want to say a pill for every ill, but just in case, the sacred of the doctor. And then – and then once I became sexually active, I started getting UTIs all the time. And I saw so many doctors. Of course, they're all Western medicine doctors, which, like, I don't hate Western medicine, but man, I wish so badly I would have been pointed in the direction of a functional medicine doctor or naturopathic doctor. But they all told me, you will only have a normal life unless, like, you have to take an antibiotic every single time after sex. Otherwise, like, it's just always going to be like this for you. There really is no other option. That is it. And you hear that from enough doctors that you're just like, okay, I guess this is it for me then. Either like a life of celibacy or I have to take an antibiotic every single time. And so, like, it obviously destroyed my gut. There was just like, I had gotten to the point where I was barely absorbing any nutrients. I was sleeping 16 hours a day. And, like, I know that my case doing so much better now. I've done so much work. I was able to get off antibiotics and find a way to cure my UTIs naturally. That was honestly one of the toughest things I've ever had to, and a lot of trial and error with doctors, like figuring that one out, you know, like how my bladder could finally do that and just be okay. And it's still my Achilles heel to this day, my bladder. But I'm not like resorting to antibiotics, that's for sure. But there are people who, because I isn't even like 10 to 20 rounds of antibiotics in your life a lot?
Yeah, when you look at the studies, it just depends like what a lot means in reference to, right? So in reference to damaging the microbiome, some studies demonstrate that one antibiotic is sufficient to disrupt the microbiome to a point where it's never rebounds to its original makeup. And then other studies will say, yeah, after about a few weeks, your microbiome should regenerate itself to its original makeup. And then other studies dispute that. But we know that once you get to a certain amount of antibiotics in your gut, you definitely create these. I don't want to use the word permanent changes, but these more stubborn kind of stubborn changes in your microbiome that makes it more difficult to get back to your original microbiome makeup. Like I said, I really just think that when it comes to medications, like I'm always like on top of all the pharma and like anti-pharma, big pharma. And a lot of MDs and DOs are not really a fan of big pharma because it's really just an institution or another industry of the 20th century, a money-making industry. It's not even about patients. And so I think medications are great. And I think antibiotics are one of the best medications that have ever been invented because they are very useful when they are necessary. But I think they're overused. And I think they're handed out
like candy.
It's awful. I mean, it really is awful when you think about it. And so
they're ruining people's lives, frankly.
No, they really are. They really are. And there's just too much. There's an overprescription of antibiotics. And I don't know what the answer is. When you look at who's prescribing them, it's typically always like primary cares or then like nurse practitioners, I think, are like high in terms of prescribing tons of unnecessary antibiotics. So I don't know. I think the shift is coming. It's just a really slow shift.
Yeah. Yes. I think so too. Someone who, let's say they, again, can't see a naturopath or a functional medicine doctor. Yeah. They know that they've had, let's say, 30 rounds of antibiotics or even 20. Is there something that like they can bet on for sure? Okay. I've had this many antibiotics. I likely have this issue going on with my gut. Or is there anything that they can like deduce, or they're like, maybe I should start eating a little bit more of this until I can see a functional medicine doctor? Or like, what would you say to that person?
Yeah, I think a great place and a simple place to start is a probiotic. And typically I like to recommend ones that are like refrigerated, or if it says shelf stable, that's fine. With a ton of different bacteria in the probiotic. So I don't like to just focus on like Acidophilus or Bifido strains. Like you want one that has a lot of the different Lactobacillus strains, the Bifido strains as well. So that's a simple place you can start in terms of probiotics. You can also do like good kefirs that are like low in sugar if you are into like milk or dairy products. If you're not into dairy products, there are other like probiotic fermented drinks that are non-dairy. I like coconut cult yogurt. I always put a lot of their yogurt in my real videos, but they make this coconut yogurt that is dairy free, and they actually add probiotics to it. So each spoon has about, I think, 25, I don't know if it's billion or million. I have to go look. I'm pretty sure it's like 25 billion.
Because oh, wait, is this that expensive ass but delicious?
It's really expensive. Really cute, it's
super cute label.
It's ridiculously expensive, but unfortunately for me, it's going to sound so bad. I actually got like mine free just to promote it on my IG, just being real honest with y'all.
Oh my gosh.
They sent me a box. They sent me a box to promote, and that's not true. I purchased my first box and then I used it and shared it in my story, and then I tagged them and they sent me another batch of yogurt. So I actually did buy it, but it was like so expensive to use. Yes. So you don't have to do that. You can always just go and get low sugar or dairy free yogurt. So they will have probiotics in them. So if you want to do food route, that's good. You can make your own kind of fermented pickled or fermented vegetables. So I like fermented. I love sauerkraut. I love anything cabbage. You can ferment anything for the most part. I have fermented watermelon rind here in St. Louis. There's a woman who takes watermelon rind and she basically ferments it, which is, it tastes amazing. So I would say probiotics, fermented foods, making sure you're having healthy bowel movements. If you're not, you want to consider why. I have somebody that I'm working with that has a loopy colon, is just the layman term for it. But basically their colon is just a little more distorted than the normal person. So when you have an anatomical switch in your colon, which is like a long tube, and it's more windy certain ways, it's just going to be harder for stool to get out. So some people, it's not an issue of fiber or a lack of exercise or their diet. It's really just their anatomy is a little shifted. So it's harder to actually for the stool to exit. So they have to take things just to help them get the poop out. And there's not enough fiber you're going to eat. And right. So when those situations happen, there are certain supplements that I love to recommend. Things I always start out with just the basics of hydration, food, and then bacteria. And then I'll branch up to, they're adding in certain types of probiotics because probiotics can have prokinetic effects and they can exert movement in the colon. Or I'll add in prokinetic botanicals or herbs like your gingers. There's a few other that I like to recommend. And then I'll sometimes branch up into supplements and I'll say, I'll start with this one. And I like to do bowel supplements at night because the gut, liver, that rest, digest, active phase. And that's why when we wake up in the morning, we're supposed to have a bowel movement because our body was just doing all this, for lack of a better word, detoxification overnight. And it's just like, hey, take the trash. It's just like our trash man. Well, my trash man comes in the morning. I don't know when y'all's trash man comes. So my trash man comes in the morning and takes the trash out. And my colon is the same way. So our colon is the same way. So typically I'll say,
I love when my trash man comes in the morning.
Yes.
I'm very proud of myself. I'm very happy when the trash man comes in the morning. That is seriously the best way to start the day.
It is. And those are just some simple things.
I'm literally going to start saying that now, even to my husband. Did the trash man come this morning?
He's loaded? Or you could say it to the kids, too. A way to discuss poop. You're around kids. It's one way to.
Yes. Mom's got to go take the trash out.
I think the one that I grew up hearing was people would say, I got to go drop the kids off at the pool. And I remember being a kid and I was so confused. You don't have kids. And it'd be adults and they would say these things. And I'm like, but you don't have kids and you don't have a pool. And it wasn't until I was older that I realized that meant I got to go to the bathroom and have a bowel movement. But I'm like, why would you use that to describe kids? But anyway.
That's so funny. Oh my gosh. That is so great. That's going to stick with me for a very, very long time. What do you think of? Okay, so for the fermented foods, is there anyone that you're like, that's not for? What about people with histamine issues?
Yeah, I see a lot of like mast cell histamine cases. Yeah, so there are certain food groups you do need to stay away from, and that would be one of them. There's also certain fruits and vegetables that are no in that category. So yeah, I think if you know you have like histamine mast cell related issues, then fermented foods may not be your best bet, and you may just go to like straight to a probiotic instead. And there are specific probiotics that are histamine. Also, they have histamine modifying actions as well. There's one I like. I can't think of the company, but it's actually a histamine biotic. So yeah.
People, okay, this is, again, sidebar, but back to mold really quick. Let's say someone's, I know I was exposed to mold. My functional medicine doctor, I like didn't want to think that I was exposed to mold. I lived in San Francisco for 4 years and she was asking me about mold. I was like, no, I don't think so. And then I was like, my buildings had mold, but my apartment didn't. She's okay, you were exposed to mold. She's like, you were in and out of that building every single day. Like, you were exposed to mold. Sorry. I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, well, now we start at it. But people who have been exposed to mold, especially over a long period of time, does it almost always translate to gut issues?
No, not necessarily. Okay. The thing with mold and mycotoxins, or the toxins produced by molds, is that we typically breathe, we can breathe them in. Molds can also interact with our body through our skin. But a lot of times we breathe in kind of mold, or if we're eating like certain foods, they have mold on them, we can actually just eat molds. But when we are in these moldy environments and we're breathing them in, it affects our respiratory system. It can affect our lungs. But also, there was some interesting literature. I don't know if the paper is published yet, but I was able to read this paper by a fellow doctor. He's a GI doctor, but it's a preprint, I believe. So he was sent me this paper, and it's discussing how a lot of these mold tests are not necessarily accurate. They're not giving you a clear picture of kind of what's stored up in the body. Now, I do using the urine mycotoxin or urine tox test because they are just insightful to know what your body is exposed to. So it's just more information if somebody wants to do that. Mold mycotoxins can cross the blood-brain barrier. So it's like there's not a test to measure that. A lot of toxins can be stored in fat. There's not a test that we're using to measure, yeah, we're urinating out these compounds, but is this what we were exposed to today, or is this what's been stored up in our body for the past 10 years and it's slowly just releasing itself? It's just not really insightful to know about current, to delineate between current exposure and like maybe past 20 year ago exposure to mold. I think that testing is useful, but I also think that being mindful, just a good history, is also really useful for knowing if you were exposed to mold. And mold can affect your gastrointestinal system, but it affects many other systems before that.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, that's interesting and good to know. I, on my list of things that I wanted to bring up to you, and I loved this post that you did about, and because it's, there is, I feel like there's a true war on gums. A lot of the influencers are like, they say that it's like the worst thing and it's their post of the day. I hate gums, blah, blah, blah. But you were saying how there's one gum that there's even been a study that shows that it could be potentially beneficial for the gut. What's just your overall thoughts on gums?
I think I don't really have any hard feelings on gums or not. I think that many like kind of gums are used in processed foods. Maybe the concentrations are off, but I don't have an issue with gums. They actually are beneficial in the gut, specifically guar gum, which comes from beans. But I think that gums are also a source of sometimes edible fibers. So I don't really have an opinion like either way. I recommend fiber powders all the time, and a lot of them have guar gum in them and amongst other things. I've never had an issue with anybody taking it.
I had an issue either. Gums do nothing to me. It's not like I'm like, oh, yay, xanthan gum, cool. But I just don't bat an eye. I'm totally like fine with it. And I've talked to a bunch of functional medicine doctors that are also okay with it.
Yeah, I don't have an issue with gums. And in some literature, they actually are beneficial for helping to eradicate SIBO. So if people have bacterial overgrowth, they help to increase the potency of the Xifaxan medication that is used. So I don't know. This is why it's just bad to take advice on the internet, because you can follow one influencer and they literally have like are telling you, you need to eat this way of fruits are the devil or meat to the devil and yada. And you can put yourself into a state of anxiety and sickness. So it's just, I don't know. I think this is why people still need to have just some kind of solid clinician on their team to help guide their care. So, yeah.
Yes. I completely agree. And when they have the means to, when they can save up for it, to get some data on their own body is just, I think, gold.
Yep, I agree. I think that it's useful to get testing done, especially if you've been suffering for a long time. If you are just new to the kind of world of sickness, I think try a few things first before, like lifestyle modifications, dietary tweaks, before spending a ton of money on tests. Because like I've seen so many cases over my career and people spending money on tests and they get all these tests done and buy these expensive packages and then they end up back at the square one, or they're like, oh yeah, I sleep a little bit better, but my other issues are not really solved. And not saying that anybody has a magic wand to just wave around and solve people's issues when they come to see them. But if you're spending all of that money, information should be at least insightful enough to where it makes some type of difference in an outcome that you're trying to achieve.
Yes, I completely I so agree with that so much. And just especially, like you said, just having someone like a clinician on your healing team is better than any influencer on right. your healing team that doesn't know anything, you know, about your health. It's just, yeah, I so completely agree with that. This has been so, this has been one of my favorite conversations I've honestly ever had on the podcast.
Thanks. This has been great. It's such a nice organic conversation.
Yes, I know. It's been so much fun. I would also love to do a live with you one day. I think that'd be really fun.
Yeah, that's, I'm down for that. Just let me know.
I know you're so busy though, but if you ever have 15 minutes here or there, I'd love to secure it.
Yeah, let's do it. But
okay, so this is just like very insightful. Like, I would you basically, like, to the person who could not afford to see like a functional medicine doctor, all that, would you say then that one of the best things they can really do is think about their history of just mold, medications, NSAIDs, things like that, like first, and just gather as much data as they possibly can?
Yeah, as much data on your body as possible. Everything that you experience, and you just get a symptom book. And so for at least 2 weeks, at tops 4 weeks, track every single day, like what you notice from the time you wake up. Like I am so perceptive of my body at all times. And like mm-hmm. from the moment I wake up, I'm like, okay, what's going on today? What's hurting? What's not hurting? And then I'm like, what did I do last night? Did I take something? Yes. Or it's just like always being in tune. So you can do that. It's and just so actually important. Yeah, get like a notebook and track it. So then you can look back after a month and see what's going on. But just every little thing you can remember in terms of where you grew up, the state, the city you grew up in, did you live near factories, like where the environment you were living in. So the environment is the air, the water, it is what we're eating and so forth. So think about all those factors and relate them to how you grew up. Did you drink well water? Did you drink tap water? Did you boil your water? Every little thing makes it make matter. So just start there.
I think that's such great advice. Being intuitive. Yeah. So many people are not, I realize.
Many people are not. And literally, this is why the world is the way it is, because so many people are not intuitive. And we literally just will, whatever the doctor says, we believe it and we go forward. Yes. Or what. It's just, it's sad to see that, but there's a shift happening.
There is a shift. Yeah. We are our own best healers at the end of the day. No one is going to spend more time with us than us. That's and true. It truly is such a gift when you become so intuitive with your body. Because I'm the same way. I know exactly what is going on. I know exactly mm-hmm. what I react to, what mm-hmm. I don't, what's good for me. It's just, it's always very clear to pinpoint. And, but it wasn't necessarily always that way. But I feel like as to what you like just said, if someone was to notebook, like journal down everything for a few weeks, just the act of doing that, even if they never did it again, I swear that would change their life, because they would all of a sudden start looking at their health a whole lot different and paying attention to everything.
It makes a huge, huge difference. And a lot of people I see have so many issues and I'm like, let's just do an elimination diet and a lot of their symptoms go away. I knew a girl who had chronic migraines since she was like in high school, and she didn't know what they were caused by. Just chronic, terrible, the worst migraines, constantly on NSAIDs, and did an elimination diet, very gluten, corn, soy, just all the things. And so got off of all those things, headaches are gone. It's just like, that is so simple. So try your foods first and do a general elimination diet. There are tons of free resources online on kind of the basics to eliminate. And just do that and try to be compliant with it and see what you notice.
Yes, that's really great advice. Thank you so much, Dr. Asia. I want everyone to go check out, she has an ebook on acid reflux, which mm-hmm. is an issue a lot of people deal with. So highly recommend that. Highly recommend following Dr. Asia. Dr. Asia, you're amazing. Thank you so much for this time.
Thank you so much for having me. This was great.
Thank you.